Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 367 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And this podcast, I'm going to be titling this as the Clutch Amyloidosis Podcast. The Clutch Amyloidosis Podcast. Amyloid is a very high yield topic. And before I jump right into it, if you're taking your USMLE Step 2 CK or Step 3 or Comlex Level 2 or 3 exams, within this month, or I would say within the first 3 weeks of March, then I do have an MBME test taking strategies course taking place on the 21st from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Mountain Time, which is 4 to 6:30 Eastern. Basically, it's 2 hours behind Eastern Time. And then I have a 24-hour review course. It's going to be taking place from the 22nd to the 25th of February. And all of this is through Zoom. The 24-hour course is from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mountain Time. That's like 9 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time every day. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. Again, I've had many people take the course and they've done extremely well on the exams. In fact, I've gotten many emails from people that have gotten in the 260s, the 270s, and even the rare 280s from taking my course. So again, I think it's something you're going to find to be helpful. And then if you're taking your USMLE exams in the summer, I have a Divine Intervention Step 2 CK school. It's going to be taking place within the first 2 weeks of May. It's going to be basically 75 hours. We're going to have like an expanded test taking strategies course. We're going to have adaptive learning. We're going to have like a ton of review. In fact, I would imagine that by the end of the course, the school, people should have about 400 to very likely 500 or more pages of notes. That does not include the slides, the tons and tons of slides they would have as well. So again, if you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website. I have a pretty comprehensive podcast where I talked about, I call it the DISC, D-I-S-K school. Okay, so let's jump right into amyloidosis, right? So, and this should be a short podcast. So what is amyloid? Well, amyloid is just pretty much a misfolded protein. Amyloid, for the most part, is a misfolded protein. And, you know, there are two ways you can get amyloidosis. I would say probably the most common pathway is you start with a protein that is normal. But because your body just produces so much of it, it then accumulates and begins to cause problems, right? Or it can also be a protein that your body accumulates because you can not just get rid of it, right? Again, just think about it, right? Like if, for example, something just keeps accumulating, over time, it's going to become problematic. Your body does not like things to accumulate. That's why your body has many organs to help you get rid of stuff, like your GI tract, your kidneys, your liver, right? Even your skin is an excretory organ, right? But if all these things are accumulating with nowhere to go, then that becomes a problem. And we'll talk about some of these things. Really, like if you understand what we talk about here today, you should be able to answer pretty much all your amyloidosis questions right on the exam, right? And then another thing I want to mention is you can also get amyloidosis from mutations in proteins that then causes them to fold in very weird ways, right? So again, it just kind of depends on, but that one is a lot rarer than just the regular amyloid, right? And for purposes of USMLE exams, sometimes amyloid is broken down into two parts, right? So we have the primary or AA amyloid, the primary of the AL amyloid. So primary or AL amyloid, that's the one that's associated with multiple myeloma. And then we have the secondary or AA amyloid. That's the one that's associated with pretty much every other cause, right? Especially when you have like chronic infection or chronic inflammation in the body, like rheumatoid arthritis, for example, right? Now, some structural information that you need to know, this is probably more so for step one, but I want this podcast to be something that will help everyone taking step one through step three and they're encountering amyloid questions. But a structural thing that's helpful to know about amyloid is that amyloid shows up as a beta pleated sheet. Right? Remember, beta-pleated sheets represent a special kind of protein structure. More specifically, it's a secondary kind of protein structure, right? So it shows up as a beta-pleated sheet, especially when you look at it under an electron microscope. And then it's also high yield to know how to identify amyloid. When a person has amyloidosis and you take the amyloid protein, the thing that's going to happen is if you stain it with a particular stain called Congo red, and then you look at it under polarized light, right? You're going to observe apple green birefringence, right? Again, these are just all basic things you kind of want to make sure you know about amyloid, right? So now let's jump into just, I'll almost call it like vignettes that our friends at the MBMEs can bring, right? So if they give you a question about a person that, you know, has a history of Down syndrome that dies of a subarachnoid hemorrhage. What's going on there? Well, I would hope you're thinking about like amyloid angiopathy, right? Amyloid angiopathy. Well, remember, people that have Down syndrome, right? That's trisomy 21. They literally have three copies of chromosome 21. And on chromosome 21, we have amyloid precursor protein, right? So normally, if you think about it, if you're normally getting gene product from two chromosomes, but now you're getting from three, you're potentially making excess, right? Those literally, those beta amyloid plaques from amyloid precursor protein, they're going to build up and they're going to deposit it in the brain and they're going to cause Alzheimer's, right? Most people that have Down syndrome right around the age of 40, almost all of them as a rule universally have Alzheimer's, right? But again, unfortunately, that beta amyloid protein can deposit in the walls of blood vessels and make them weaker. And when you deposit those things, then those vessels can blow out and the person can get into trouble with a subarachnoid hemorrhage, right? And I guess one thing I should have maybe said in the introduction is amyloid can affect many organs in the body. But the primary organ amyloid loves to go after is the kidneys. The kidneys are the most commonly affected organ in amyloidosis. But if you see a person that has amyloidosis die, most times they die from heart disease, right? Amyloidosis can cause diastolic dysfunction of the heart because it kind of deposits in the walls of the heart, causes like electrical problems in the heart, causes problems with the heart feeling appropriately. So the person goes into diastolic heart failure. That is, if I'm not mistaken, the most common cause of death in people that have amyloidosis, right? Or if they give you a question about a person, you know, like an old guy that has been having multiple falls, that's a pretty classic way they like to present this, right? And they may tell you that, you know, he has these visual hallucinations. Then I really hope you're thinking about Lewy body dementia, right? Remember, Lewy body dementia is kind of related to Parkinson's disease, right? So really, like, these Parkinson's disease / Parkinson's disease related syndromes, like multiple system atrophy, for example, they are associated with mutations in a protein with amyloid, right? From a protein called alpha-synuclein. Alpha-synuclein is the protein that causes the problem, right? Or you can see people that have, you know, they give you a question about like a neuropathologist or a person that's an archaeologist, and the person over like 6 weeks, they have this rapidly progressive dementia and then they pass away, right? I would really hope you're saying, oh, divine. And many times they'll have myoclonus, right? That's Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, right? Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, that's spelled as C-R-E-U-T-Z. F-E-L-D-T, right? Creutzfeldt-Jakob, some people say J-A-C-O-B or J-A-K-O-B, right? So Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, it's a prion disease, right? Sometimes they call it a spongiform encephalopathy on exams, right? So again, remember our friends at the MBMEs, one thing they've started doing in recent times is instead of using the name that you're used to, they just use a name that describes the pathology. Again, that's why you cannot just onkey your way to success on this exam. You should onkey, don't get me wrong, onkey is amazing. It's one of the best tools ever invented, but you need to make sure you're understanding those things you're just onkeying, right? So when a person has Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, sometimes they can call it a spongiform encephalopathy. It's just a description of how the brain looks grossly when those people die, because those people are invariably going to die, right? And remember, the protein that causes the problem is the PRP superscript SC protein, right? So PRP superscript SC protein is a prion disease, right? It's a prion disease. And then if they give you a question about a person that has dementia, has all these inappropriate words, gestures, stuff like that, you want to think about like frontotemporal dementia, right? Or even Pick's disease. Sometimes they call it Pick's disease, right? Those things are actually associated with amyloidosis, right? Really, many dementias are associated with amyloidosis, right? So like the protein there is, right? Like it's a tau protein, right? It's a protein that's associated with microtubules. Remember, microtubules are things that move along, they're very important for moving neurotransmitters in neurons, right? So it would make sense that it can cause a lot of neurologic disease because guess what? Your brain is chock full of neurons, right? Even they give you a question about a computer scientist, right? That has, he's like in his 40s and, you know, he has these coryphon movements, inappropriate words, right? That's going to be Huntington's, right? Autosomal dominant disease, chromosome 4 problem, CAG trinucleotide repeats, right? Those are all associated with amyloid, right? Like really, like the Huntington protein can form amyloid, The Huntington protein can form amyloid, right? And then if they give you a question about some old person with pathologic fractures, right? And you notice that the person's calcium is like 15, like, you know, some crazy high number. And the person keeps getting these recurrent infections, right? That's going to be multiple myeloma, right? It's going to be pretty classic for primary or AL amyloid. Remember, it's the light chains that cause the problem, right? It's the light chains that cause the problem. Remember, in multiple myeloma, right? The hallmark of those crap symptoms, hypercalcemia, renal failure, anemia, bone pain, right? Again, because again, those plasma cells, they take over the bone marrow, so you're not able to produce red blood cells, so you get an anemia, right? And then you may wonder why they're getting recurrent infections. Well, the thing is, plasma cells are supposed to be your antibody factories, but those plasma cells in multiple myeloma, those cells are super defective. They don't really work well at all, right? So the person is not going to have a good time, right? So they're going to have amyloidosis, right? Because those light chains are going to accumulate, right? So that's something that's pretty high yield to know for exams, right? And then really, if you have any chronic inflammatory state, rheumatoid arthritis, or like a chronic infection, like chronic osteomyelitis, for example, right? You form an acute phase reactant. That acute phase reactant is called a serum amyloid A. That serum amyloid A can literally accumulate again and form amyloid, right? Now, what if they give you a question about an old guy, right? Usually, I mean, this condition I'm going to discuss now, it certainly happens in old women, but it's something that almost exclusively on NBMEs and also just in the real world happens in old men, right? They give you a question about an old man, and he insidiously develops these heart failure symptoms, you know, like he has like pulmonary edema, has jugular venous distension, has low extremity edema, right? And then they tell you that the man is bradycardic, right? That's a very specific signature. It's going to be an old man. Usually it's going to be a person over the age of 80 on exam. Sometimes they can give you in the 70s, but usually it's going to be a person over the age of 80, right? Old man with heart failure symptoms and bradycardia. If you see this, I really want you to think about something that we call senile systemic amyloidosis, right? Senile systemic amyloidosis, right? The thing is, it's a normal protein. It's a protein called a transthyretin, T-R-A-N-S-T-H-Y-R-E-T-I-N, right? Transthyretin. It can deposit in the heart, right? And again, when amyloid deposits, right, it causes electrical problems. So these people can get all these heart blocks, right? They can get really bad bradycardia, right? But they'll also have heart failure symptoms. That's the classic way. This is one of those things that you learn by way of a high yield history on NBME exams, right? And how do you diagnose this senile amyloidosis, right? So back in the day, and actually to this day, some people still do biopsies, right? Again, you biopsy the heart, you do an endomyocardial biopsy guided by echocardiography, usually like a TEE, right? And you get a sample, check it under, you know, polarized light, stain Congo red, right? You're going to see apple green birefringence. I've actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, I've seen this in the real world, but actually it's not, I think I have seen this in the real world, right? But these days, the way it's diagnosed, you can actually use a nuclear medicine study, right? So there's this thing called the technetium-99m pyrophosphate scan, right? So technetium-99m scintigraphy, you can use that to diagnose senile systemic amyloidosis, right? Or if they give you a question about a person that has been on dialysis for a long time, right? And then you start noticing that they have like carpal tunnel syndrome, they're having diastolic cardiac dysfunction, they're having like an enlarged tongue. When you see stuff like that, I want you to think about dialysis-related amyloidosis, right? Remember, in dialysis, normally your kidneys can get rid of the protein beta-2 microglobulin. But when you have dialysis, you cannot, right? The dialysis machine cannot get rid of beta-2 microglobulin. So beta-2 microglobulin, right, is one of the things you find on receptors in many of your immune system cells. It's going to build up, right, and it's going to form amyloid. And then, also remember, if a person has diabetes, right, especially type 2 diabetes, over time, because if you've probably learned this, that people that have type 2 diabetes, you know, over time their pancreas is going to burn out. One of the thoughts as to why their pancreas burns out is because they are making a ton of amyloid, right? That amyloid then deposits in the pancreas and destroys it. So where does the amyloid come from? Well, remember, whenever people that have type 2 diabetes, the problem is they have like insulin resistance, right? So people that have type 2 diabetes, they actually have pretty crazy high amounts of insulin, right? So the thing is, as insulin is being made, there's another protein that's made at the same time called amylin, A-M-Y, like Amy, right? A-M-Y-L-I-N, right? Sometimes they call it IAPP, right? So that amylin can accumulate and form amyloid, right? In fact, you can also see a similar amyloidosis in a person that has an insulinoma. Remember, people that have insulinomas, they're going to have Whipple's triad, right? It's one of the most obvious triads in all of medicine, right? They're going to be hypoglycemic, then they're going to have signs of hypoglycemia, and then said hypoglycemia will resolve when you give them glucose. Kind of makes sense. I don't know why that's a triad in the first place, but anywho, I'm going to get off my soapbox, right? So that's another thing that can cause amyloidosis, right? That amylin can form polymers that can then become amyloid, right? Or you see a person that, you know, has like a neck mass, right? And again, they start having these antecedents of amyloidosis, like carpal tunnel syndrome. Remember, amyloid loves to deposit in the carpal tunnel, right? It can cause carpal tunnel syndrome, right? It can cause enlargement of the tongue. It can cause cardiac arrhythmias, right? Diastolic dysfunction. But again, I said, the most common organ it involves is the kidneys, right? Those people can absolutely form amyloid, right? So remember, in medullary thyroid cancer, right, calcitonin, that calcitonin can, you know, come together and form amyloid, right? So again, those are just all things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Or they can even give you a question about a person that develops amyloidosis. Like this one is not systemic. It tends to be like localized, like it's an injection site problem, right? Like a person that has been on like chronic injections for HIV, right? This is going to be the drug enfuvirtide, right? For those of you studying for step one, I would really hope you know what enfuvirtide is or does, right? It's a fusion inhibitor, right? Remember, GP41 is a protein that enables HIV to fuse and then infect a cell, right? So the thing is, enfuvirtide, spelled as E-N-F-U-V-I-R-T-I-D-E, enfuvirtide, right? It can form amyloidosis, right? At the site of injection, right? That's something to just keep in mind for exams. Just one of these weird things you see on your exams and you're like, whoa, where did this come from, right? So again, if you know these things I've described about amyloidosis, you should be in pretty good shape. So I think I'm going to go ahead and wrap up here. Again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring from all the USMLE exams, step one, step two, CK, step three, preclinical med school exams, 30-year shelf exams. And I also offer tutoring for, you know, I offer these courses for step 2CK and step three, right? I have the Divine Intervention step 2CK school. It's limited to 40 people. Again, it's taking place in the first 2 weeks of May. But then I also have a 24-hour review course that I host. That's going to be taking place at the end of this month, again, from the 22nd to the 25th, and an MBME test-taking strategies course on the 21st. And then I do have these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, right? So if you're interested in any of these podcasts, just go ahead and find it. You know, you're going to find the most recent 150. If you want everything from episode 1 to episode 367, you have to go on the website, divineinterventionpodcast.com. If you have a WordPress account and you subscribe, then you'll get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. And then I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE podcasts and videos. That's where I post the videos that I make. And I do make quite a few videos every now and then. And then finally, I also have a new website called Divine Intervention, lifelessons.com. It's a Bible-based website. It's a lot of podcasts, and most of them are about 10 minutes long, 10, 12 minutes long. And I just describe a classic problem that's facing humanity, and then just describe how the Bible tackles that problem. I actually also have the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons Podcast. So thank you for listening to me. One quick thing I just want to say here is this is a new year, right? Stop looking backwards, right? Start looking forwards. I feel like that's kind of like a good life lesson for today, right? Many people, they just keep looking backward. The thing is, you know, you may have made mistakes in your past. Everyone has made mistakes at some point, you know, made mistakes in your past, checkered past, you know, bad relationships, bad things you've done, people you've hurt, right? But again, you can turn your life around, right? The way you turn around, right? Think about it. If you want to turn around, then you should stop moving in the direction we're moving before, right? So if you were moving backwards before, just start moving forwards, right? Start looking forwards. I like this Bible character, like Lot, his wife, you know, they were being delivered from Sodom and Gomorrah, but they were like, Lot's wife was like, you know what? I really like Sodom and Gomorrah a lot, right? She kept looking at Sodom and Gomorrah. And then in the end, she turned to a pillar of salt, right? No, just keep moving forward. Keep moving forward, right? So I'm telling you, if you've messed up in the past, the fact that you have a bad background doesn't, again, you've heard this statement many times, right? Your background should not keep your back to the ground, right? Just keep looking forward, keep pressing forward, right? And all be well with you. So thank you for listening to this podcast. Have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you and have a great weekend. Thank you.